And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post podcast, where I think we can all agree that when we remember and think about the grit and grind Grizzlies and what grit and grind is as an ethos, what it looks like, what it plays like, I think we all think of one person. Some people might say Tony Allen. Some people might say Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol. For me, when I think of grit and grind, I think of John Hollinger of The Athletic. How are you?
Doing great. Doing great. Thank you so much for having me. We finally did it, man, after like 20 years or whatever.
Of a lot of years. The OG, the best to ever do it, now doing it at The Athletic. And how many years at the Grizzlies, man? It flew like seven
years, man. It goes fast, I tell you.
Who drank more this summer? You or Marc Gasol?
Ooh, that's close. I mean, Mark in one day might have just topped my entire summer. I don't know. I had a pretty good summer though. It was nice.
Well, now the NBA season is a quarter of the way through, and we will be on December 15th. Trade season will be officially, unofficially underway because all the free agents can be traded, or most of them anyway. And I thought that would be a good time to have you in. Plus, you're in New York to go to a college game for some reason. You're still paying attention to college basketball for some reason.
I can't get it out of my system.
Did you have a normal Thanksgiving this year? Or did you, like, because that's one of the benefits of not working for a team. Working for a team,
yeah.
you're scouting.
You're always at a college tournament. Although, actually, it's funny because I would always go to the Maui Invitational. So it wasn't maybe so bad.
Okay.
So, yeah. So when I got this job, my wife was like, yeah, are there any tournaments like in Maui that you might have to do?
My wife and kid are coming with me to Miami in January. When they heard a Miami trip was on the books, they're like, yep, that one. Mm-hmm. We're coming to that one, Miami in January. Okay, trade season. So the league is in a very strange place, I find. I'm not sure what it will do to trade activity. We can talk about that. But Beal is off limits. Mm-hmm. Some other teams have signed extensions that are weirdly hamstringing them.
Yeah,
in trade season. And if you look at Toronto, let's just go through some teams like that we thought could be active one way or another. Toronto, everyone was obsessed with. They're going to sell off their pieces, blah, blah, blah. I predicted they would not. Now they're too good.
Exactly. They are too good right now. I think you're right. They're going to be a top four seed, certainly. If anything, they may look to add. I think they still have to tiptoe a little bit. They don't want to mess up a potential summer of 21 bonanza. I think a lot of teams are looking toward that. But the Lowry extension was perfect, right? It gave them so much flexibility to go either way.
Yeah, they can still trade him. And he, to me, was once Bradley Beal got extended, Kyle was the one guy where you were like, because of his position, his ability to fit with other elite players, was just a no-brainer. Like, he could actually move the needle for some of these teams. But
not even a rental.
No, he's got a year left, but they're 16-7 against a tough schedule. I would be shocked if they did anything. Oklahoma City, which is a team, I don't know that I've ever felt this particular emotion as strongly as I do with the Thunder. I watched the Thunder play. They're a fine team. They're 11-12. They're in the playoffs if the playoffs end, if the season ended today.
They may inadvertently make the playoffs just because the bottom's fallen out of that part of the West this year.
But I find watching them so cold, and I almost admire their ability from Sam Presti to Abdul Nader to function as a team, because they're like, imagine playing on that team. Like, you know, this is like the ultimate placeholder team. Like, Chris Paul's not here for any other reason than to get traded. Danilo mm-hmm. Gallinari's not here for any other reason to get traded. Dennis Schroeder, same thing. Eventually, Steven Adams probably will get traded. Like, but they're playing together. They have weird lineups. They play three point guards at the same time, and those lineups are destroying everybody. And I don't know that anyone I predicted before the season, many of my predictions will be wrong, but one that I'm confident in, that Chris Paul would not get traded during the season. I don't think they're going to have a blowaway market for Adams, for any of these guys. They may just, like, the team that we all assumed existed simply for the purpose of making trades may just sort of by default do nothing.
And end up in the playoffs.
Minnesota. Are they a buyer or a seller? Are they a nothing? They are certainly hungry to make the playoffs. That would make them a buyer. They're falling to 10-13, but do they want to sell? They have a piece that everybody would want in Robert Covington, and then some pieces nobody wants for any reason.
Well, I mean, the Gorgui Dieng contract is one of the few toxic contracts really left in the league. After the summer of the summer orgy of 16 is coming off the books for everyone this year. So you have all that out of the way, but other than sort of high profile players who maybe they make too much money when you look at like the Chris Paul, Kevin Loves of the world, then Gorgie's one of the few where that's a contract that could they look to dump that? But then who are you signing once you dump it is the other thing when you look at the free agent market next year.
Well, I think they'll look at I think if anything Minnesota might be pseudo buyers, by which I mean like let's take a flyer on a point guard because we're literally not starting one. They're not starting a point guard. Let's take a flyer on someone who like maybe can help us, but is more like I could see Schroeder. I could see if they were like 5 wins better, I could see them calling about some bigger name veteran point guards. But you know the Spurs a week or two ago, it was like they're gonna trade DeRozan, trade Aldridge. Now they're like a game out of the playoffs all of a sudden. Like the West is so bad. Are they gonna keep it together? I don't know. Phoenix, 11-12. I guess they would be buyers to try to make the playoffs.
See, I think because they've been so hopeless for so long, like the idea of making the playoffs for them, I do think they could probably be a buyer.
They got one big expiring in Tyler Johnson. They have all their picks. Got some little like $5 million kind of contracts. Kaminsky, Baines, Baines is like the MVP of their team, so they're not trading him. Saric is a free agent. Is he part of their long-term plans? Maybe, but maybe not if they can. I don't know. We'll see.
Plus, they have the best rookie in the league.
Do they?
Ty Jerome of the University of Virginia.
God, UVA. I can't talk to you about you. I have a blind spot for UVA. It's not going to happen for us. We're not going to be able to, we're not going to be able to have a good-natured UVA talk to. There's a girl who broke my heart. It's bad. Like, I can't. When they lost in the first round of the tournament 2 years ago, I was really, really happy. Like, it was really,
It was cathartic for you, huh?
It was not a good moment for me. Like it was not, I'm not proud of my behavior and how I felt about it. I spent a lot of time at the University of Virginia. Spent a lot of weekends. I was like the 24-year-old interloper dating an undergrad. The weekends at UVA.
I have the tweets from all your burner accounts, so.
We dressed up as I was going to talk about how I can't.
Let's leave that aside.
Yeah. Miami is one of the more interesting teams to me in that they are tailor-made to be an aggressive buyer, but they're like so good that trading out of their rotation is now problematic for them. Like everyone's like, oh, Dragic is on an expiring, Justice Winslow is interesting, but like those guys are good players for a team that is 17-6.
Yeah.
You got to get somebody actually really good to do that.
They basically have no picks to put in play, right? So you're talking about either Justice Winslow or Tyler Harrow being the bait and trying to get somebody to take Olynyk or Waiters off your hands. And that's how a deal could be.
Olynyk's been kind of good for them this year. Yeah. Like he's been all right. He's making shots.
I don't know. I watch him on defense and man,
he's
gotten even slower.
It's not great. Whenever him or Leonard is on the floor, very often Bam will have to guard power forwards, which takes Bam's rim protection a little bit out of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's not around the rim. And I am very, very intrigued by the numbers with Bam at center, Bam and four guards or wings. So no Leonard, no Olynyk, no Chris Silva.
Yeah.
Are really, really good so far. And Miami feels like it's one upgrade in those lineups away from being really, really dangerous. I just don't know who that player is going to be. At the beginning of the season, I thought it could be Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, as we've talked about, that it could be Lowry. I don't see them going for Love because of the summer of 2021 stuff you discussed, the summer of the Greek Freak and others. I could see, what about Gallinari? Because of all the Oklahoma City guys, even if the market's not great, Gallo's the only one that's expiring, and Presti does not want him to walk for nothing, I bet.
Yeah, I think that's the most interesting one. Absolutely. Are you willing to do a Winslow for Gallinari?
See, that's the thing. I just don't know what
the
pieces are.
Clean up your books a little bit, but is it?
Can I get him for, I mean, the junk I have?
And then you're going the opposite way, too, because Gallinari isn't, like, one of the reasons that four smalls with Bam works is, like, you're so switchable. Gallinari on that end is a little, you know, a little stiff, not quite as
and my not to take us into NC-17 territory because I don't mean it this way, but if I'm in the Heat, my junk is like really junky. Like Dion Waiters is as junky as it gets right now after the gummy incident of 2019. James Johnson, I love James Johnson as a player. He has not been in the rotation this year. He failed the conditioning test. He has a $16 million player option for next year. Like that is junky.
Yeah.
So you're really then back to the Dragic expiring and what I have to attach to that and if that's worth it to get me 1 year of Gallinari. Like am I that good if I'm the Heat? Is Gallinari making me a title contender?
You might still lose in the first round when you look at those other four teams in the East.
Even like a team like Detroit looked headed for hell, just missed the playoffs with a capped out roster from hell, and now they're two games back in the loss column and you figure given their MO, they should be all in to make the playoffs, and then they have Drummond entering free agency. Like, are they really just going to either lose Drummond or pay him an obscene amount of money instead of investigating the trade market for him? They might actually go not investigate the trade. I don't – all these teams are, like, in this amorphous – like, the Wizards.
Mm-hmm.
The Wizards have one really nice trade asset in Davis Bertans.
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't they just keep him?
He's young enough that it makes sense to just keep him.
He's not going to cost that much money. Like, no one is going to go overboard with this one. I mean, he's always been a good shooter, but what he's doing this year, I mean, the shots he's taking are like, the guys are in his jerseys. Like, I'm rising up.
Well, he's tall. He like, and he gets elevation on his jumper. That's a hard shot to get to and really contest. And he's gotten really comfortable with it. I think, one of the few, mistakes of the Spurs era, probably.
Well, the whole thing was a mess. Whatever happened with Marcus Morris, and it has hurt the Spurs, and there's clearly bitterness between the Spurs and the Knicks over Porzingis and blah blah blah. So all these teams, we don't know what they're going to do, but it leaves us with a few teams that are I think clearly super interesting, and you can pick either one of these teams or go outside left field. Maybe there's another team you want to talk about. Utah is not going to sit back and be bad. Like this, like they have been. Now they're 13-11. They're not bad. They've had a very tough schedule, and they have a history of cleaning up against their soft part of the schedule in the winter. So maybe they're fine, but boy, do they look bad. Portland, maybe you want to start there because I don't know what the hell Portland is supposed to do at 9-15 and with half their roster injured. And then the clear other clear buyer is going to be Houston. You know they're going to look at everything. Mm-hmm. And at 6-18. It's time for the Pelicans to look in the mirror and think about what they can get for Jrue Holiday, J.J. Redick. So pick any of those teams. Tell me who's the most interesting to you.
By far, Portland. I thought they were the most interesting coming into the season. I thought they didn't have a really honest view of themselves coming into the year with all this championship talk. When you look at their team, it's like, okay, even before you had any of these injuries, like you played – Anthony Tolliver, Scalabissié, and Mario Hezonja in the first quarter of the first game at the same time. Like, you're not a contender.
I told you. You cannot come on this podcast and slander Mario Hezonja. I told you. And we're not even 10 minutes in. And you are slandering Dubrovnik Croatia's own Mario Hezonja.
Did you see
have anything to say for yourself?
Did you see his reverse layup against Oklahoma City the other night?
I assume it went cleanly through the net.
It almost got to the net.
I didn't see it.
It was a thing of beauty.
I only watched half that game, so I missed whatever happened.
Yeah, it wasn't quite on par with the between the legs pass, but it was a moment.
So I want to defend the Blazers for a second because I actually had them in my free agency wrap up column last year. I had them as tentative winners, even though I don't really particularly like Hassan Whiteside, and I think Harkless and Aminu, for all their flaws, in the right setting are switchable wing type players that are helpful to your team. And everybody could see they were thin at power forward.
Mm-hmm.
Little slight on the wing and really dependent on Zach Collins staying healthy, and that didn't happen. But you can't plan your life around Zach Collins getting injured. I could understand why the Blazers were tired of watching Harkless and Aminu miss wide open threes every single playoffs.
Yep.
And by the end.
And get schemed off the floor.
And get played off the floor to the point that by go time against Denver, they're playing Hood at the three and Collins at the four, and that's what they're riding with. I understood the need to get a center that you knew can give me 25 to 30 minutes of numbers. Now, I don't know that Hassan Whiteside gives you like actual winning production, but he's a big body who's going to get rebounds and not get bowled over by Nikola Jokic and, you know, whoever, Steven Adams and whoever else you're going to have to face night to night. I understood all of it. And without, with their total lack of flexibility, it's not like they could go pick any center they wanted. They needed to go get, they needed to trade distressed assets for distressed assets. That said, I didn't like, all of that said, like, I understand why people are critical of their roster. I don't love their team. And I just wonder, I do think you need to do the opposite exercise though. Go back and say, all right, if you don't like what they did, what's your alternative plan, particularly in light of knowing Nurkic is going to be out for a long, long time?
I actually thought they had a decent off season because they did that. They got a good deal on Hood, you know, for a relatively productive wing player. They got him for the taxpayer mid-level. I thought they did a ballsy thing with Simons, which is basically saying, we're not going to bring in any other point guard, any other veteran whatsoever. We're going to make sure Simons plays. We think he's ready. He's just going to play.
You've talked about this before in your time at the Grizzlies, about when front offices and coaching staffs are a little bit at odds and sometimes you have to remove a veteran player to force the coaches to play the young player. That's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, and I think in our situation it was probably a little different. We never quite had, other than maybe Jordan Adams' rookie year before he got hurt, we never quite had somebody who was playing at enough of a level as a rookie where we had to say like, okay, we got to move heaven and earth to get this guy on the floor. I mean, Dylan Brooks, his rookie year, he played because we were so bad by the end of it. So,
Dylan Brooks, does he foul people at the grocery store? He just is always nudging people and shoving people.
Yeah,
like, he's a walking foul, that guy.
Yeah, he is. He's, you know, he's one of those guys like Carmelo who really enjoys the physicality, you know? Like if the refs put away their whistles, a lot of guys would complain and stuff. And I think Carmelo Anthony and Dylan Brooks would just be like, hey, this is awesome. Like, I'm having so much fun right now.
He's irritating to play against. You can tell that some players don't like to play against.
Oh, he talks too, man.
He's a trash talker?
Yeah.
Continue with Portland. You like their offseason, but...
But I just think the deck was so stacked against them. You don't have Nurkic, right? And you're in the tax. You just have a small exception. You just had the late first-round pick. They got Nasir Little with it.
Who... People didn't like. He's interesting to me. Now that I've seen him play,
he's a down the line guy. He is interesting. You know, he showed flashes of that athleticism at North Carolina and at some of the other events that we see leading up to that. His skill level needs to improve for him to be more than a 6'6" power forward. But I mean, Portland's track record on that front is pretty good. You know, with their player development and whatnot. So
absolutely.
I thought at that point in the draft, I think he was 25 in a weak draft. I thought that was a pretty good pick. I think their minimums, they aimed more for veterans who were at the end of the line, thinking maybe they just needed kind of give us 10 solid minutes and wave the towel kind of guys.
Yeah.
And instead, these guys got in positions where they're being counted on. And
I think LeBissier has been okay for them. He's been a functional backup center for them.
Yeah.
The only thing that I could come up with as an alternative path was, okay, keep Harkless, keep Aminu. The only, like, for the tax mid-level, there were a couple of centers available.
Well, they tried to bring back Cantor first, remember?
That's right.
So they tried that as plan A, and then when that didn't happen, they turned to Rodney Hood and do the Whiteside trade.
Did they have to use the tax mid-level on Hood, or did they have enough bird rights to get him?
No, they had to use it because he had signed a one-year deal to come back to Cleveland, I think.
Because one of the great signings of the summer is going to end up being Rashawn Holmes, who I've always liked, and I have the receipts for that. He was in my Luke Walton All-Stars column last summer. But boy, the Kings are dead without Rashawn Holmes.
Oh, absolutely.
Dead.
Absolutely.
They're not even playing any other centers anymore. They're playing Bayleaf at center when he sits on the edge.
Yeah. He's arguably been their best player this year, and he was a bargain signing, and how good would Phoenix be if they had hung on to him? How about that?
Well, they're happy with Baines. They exchanged essentially.
Well, yeah, that's true. Although it's been the Frank Kaminsky missed layup show for the last 15 games. Or
Frank
so.
The Tank. So what does Portland do now? That's the question. Hood's out for the season. Collins is out for a long time. Nurkic is the last I heard was something like February.
Yeah.
And I think with an injury like that, you just got to assume that you're getting 75% of what he was last year until he gets back.
Oh, and even when he comes back, it's not like you're going to roll him in for 40 minutes a night, right? You're still going to be measured with it and maybe not playing back-to-backs. And so I think Portland, to me, coming into this year, it was clear they're much better set up for next year than they are for this year. If you look at the money they have coming off their cap, if you look at some of the, you know, you got these guys like Simons and Little waiting in the wings who will be a year further along. You still have Lillard and McCollum signed long term. You still have Nurkic on a great deal, and he'll be presumably healthy by this point.
Nurkic's deal is a joke. It's so good.
Yeah, I mean,
if you get the kind of production you got from him last season, it declines and it has a non-guaranteed year in 2022 for 13.2 and the whatever percentage of that is guaranteed. It's a crazy good deal.
Portland, unlike a lot of these other teams, still is sitting on their future picks.
Yep, they have every pick.
So they have a lot of ability to make a move for one of these players who might be available on the market, but not necessarily to do it for this year. Because, I mean, to me, you look at, I mean, this season's circling the drain for them. I mean, maybe they limp in at the eighth seed, but like all this talk at the beginning of the season about contending for a championship is not happening.
Well, and limping in for the eighth seed doesn't look as enticing with the Lakers being 21-3 and the Clippers being whoever you end up
playing. Yeah, you're just going to get completely exposed in the first round and possibly miss out on a top pick.
The Hood injury is interesting because I just wonder if they've reached, like, they have been the Kevin Love trade destination for a year now. Every fake Kevin Love trade discussion starts with Portland for many, many reasons. The expiring's tied to Bazemore and Whiteside and all of this. But they're at the point now, they've reached such a critical level with their injuries where, like, I'm not sure what they accomplish trading two expirings or one expiring. Like, if you flop Whiteside for Love, I'm not sure what that – you're so thin at every position already that I'm not sure what that's really doing for your team at this point.
No. Any move you make, I think you're making for next year if you're them at this point. And now you have the PR cover too. Like, okay, look, we got two guys out for the season. You know, hey, we got to go in a different direction. So the other interesting aspect of Portland nobody's talking about, they're $12 million in the tax.
Yeah, they are way in the tax. And to their credit, another thing they don't get credit for, they signed all those deals in the summer of 2016. They got screwed because all their guys were up in the cap spike free agency.
Mm-hmm.
They had the Allen Crabb thing and all that, the offer sheet from the Nets. They got off of all that stuff with like minimal pain. They didn't have to give up picks. They didn't have, like, they got off of all
some
that
of us
stuff.
In the Western Conference were a little upset that they got off of Crabb so easily.
They did. I mean, they found a way to do it.
Because we thought that was really where the vice grip was going to get them.
And it didn't. They got off of him, and it was not painful. But now he's a non-entity with the Hawks. It's strange. I agree with you. I just don't know. The theoretical team of Lillard, McCollum, Love, and Nurkic is really, really good. It's also really expensive. I just don't know making that trade in season this season does you any good.
I don't think so. If Love was 25, I'd think differently about it. But, he's at a point where the clock's ticking on him a little bit.
Let's talk about Kevin Love. Do you have any other Portland thoughts? Other than you like the bike lanes and the coffee and all this?
Yeah. And the airport carpet. Don't forget that.
That's true. Do you ever feel like ticketing websites make getting to the event difficult on purpose? It's as if they're so big they can get away with not caring about the customer experience, which is the only thing they should care about. But with millions of live events and a price match guarantee, that's important. SeatGeek proves there's a better way. You can search for sports, live music, comedy, and more. Everything. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. They built the fastest way to find tickets, so you can stop searching the whole secondary market, dozens of websites for the perfect seat, and start simplifying your life. SeatGeek pulls together millions of tickets from all over the web, and it rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10. Then it displays them on an interactive seat map that is super easy to use. Green dots mean good deals. Red dots, maybe not so good. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets with confidence. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the fastest and easiest way to buy tickets. I've used it for NBA games, Broadway shows, lots of stuff. And SeatGeek will even give you $10 off your first purchase. All you need to do is use our promo code. Download the SeatGeek app today. Use promo code LOW, my last name, the name of this podcast. Bam, $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code LOW for $10 off your first purchase with SeatGeek. So let's find a home for Kevin Love. We've just talked about Portland. If not them, do you have a team you like for Kevin Love right now?
You know what else makes it really hard? A lot of these teams that could theoretically be players, they can't even stack enough contracts to get to his number the way things lined up, because so many teams use cap space this summer. You look at the Clippers,
out,
Utah, Lakers, even if they wanted to, they gotta put together, like,
they're 21-3, man.
Yeah, well, why would they need to even do anything? Yeah.
Well, Utah's an interesting.
They will eventually play a road game, but
Utah's an interesting example because they need to do something. Well, maybe they don't. Again, they have a track record of they are going to be better than this. However, this does feel differently to me than the prior two or three seasons where you look at their schedule and are, well, I get why they're going to get they're going to be behind the eight ball, and on January 1st they're going to flip it. And this doesn't look right. This doesn't look right. It doesn't feel right. And the, like, they're getting the doors blown off of them at home by good teams and okay teams and not great teams. And they will win more games organically because of the schedule, because of the time it takes for players to gain chemistry and for Joe Ingles to figure out what life is like coming off the bench without Derek Favors to run pick and roll with, and all of this stuff that we know is going on and is new for them.
Yeah.
But this doesn't look good. This is a team that's their bottom six in offense, and it just looks clunky and stuttered and bad. And so maybe they do nothing. But the reason I bring them up is that Joe Ingles extension, and Houston is experiencing something similar with their Eric Gordon extension. Those guys can't get traded during the season now because of those extensions. And so there's, in Utah's case, an $11 million salary that they can't trade, that they can't put in any trade. And in Houston's case, a $16 million salary that they can't trade. And those teams looking to upgrade, like, they just don't have the ammo to do it now.
Yeah. In both cases, it is the single most convenient salary they would have had to put in a trade.
Utah can't go, like, I think Kevin Love would be it's expensive when you start stacking Conley plus Love plus Gobert, and then Mitchell comes up in a year.
Bogdanovic, too.
Yeah. And
where's he from?
Croatia.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. He's had a hell of a year. Oh, his last four or five games have been bad. But I just don't know that they can do anything. Boston, everyone wants Boston to upgrade their front court. Is Kevin Love better than any of their five best perimeter players? Kemba, Jalen, Jason, Gordon, Marcus Smart. Is he, just forget contracts and all, is he better than any of those guys? Is he better than Marcus Smart? For winning playoff games, is Kevin Love better than Marcus Smart?
It's close enough that we would end up debating it, right?
So that's a no. Cross him off. That's a no. They're not trading for Kevin Love.
The thing I think coming into the year people thought might happen with Boston is that Hayward might be the guy to be the matching salary in a deal. But now Hayward's been so good that I don't think you look at him the same way as you do the kind of injured guy that was playing for them last year that didn't totally fit.
This is purely speculative. Let me make that clear. I don't think the Celtics were ever going to trade Gordon Hayward. I think that they have felt a little bit of pain from the perception that they are the franchise that doesn't care about. That they are the franchise that will trade Isaiah Thomas. You know, I think that they're the team that views players as fungible. And here's Brad Stevens, college player who comes as a big free agent, snaps his leg in half in his very first quarter of his very first game. I just don't think that I think that the optics, which is now a word that people say all the time, the optics of trading him were not going to be good. And I don't know if they were ever going to do it. You know who my favorite sneaky Kevin Love team was before I thought too hard about it and now doubt it? Washington.
That goofy team, like, that would be the one thing to just take them to, like, next level. Like, we don't even care at all about defense. We're just going to space the floor, play Love and Bertans together, you know, try to win 170 to 165.
But couldn't you – maybe Bertans is traded in that deal. Well, couldn't you just see them saying to themselves, John Wall's coming back next season.
Mm-hmm.
John Wall, Brad Beal, Kevin Love. We're a 48-50 win team in the Eastern Conference. Let's do it. We got expirings. We got picks. We got some stuff. I don't see it happening. I don't think it's going to happen. I sniffed around.
I don't think so. That's a good one though. I like that. I like that. And then you could call the team Love and Basket Beal.
Oh boy, I knew this was a mistake. Can I throw another Kevin Love trade at you?
Yeah, I'm sure you just want to throw something else at me, but
Cleveland fans are going to hate this trade.
Okay.
I'm not sure they're going to do any better than this. Maybe this is your baseline Kevin Love trade. Bismack Biyombo, Michael Kidd, Gilchrist, and Malik Monk. So two dead salaries in Malik Monk.
Yeah.
But
so
you know what?
Charlotte's, but it, so this is
Cleveland,
like the,
you know what? I'm taking that back because Cleveland already has two guards who don't pass. Two young guards who don't pass. But Charlotte, some one nominal asset from Charlotte.
And this is like just a Charlotte trying to desperately get back to the eight seed again kind of move?
Yes.
I think they're ready to take their medicine.
You think so?
Yeah.
I mean, their moves over the last year or so would indicate that they are, other than signing Rozier, who, by the way, credit to Terry Rozier. I doubted that contract. I still kind of doubt it, but the guy is making half his catch and shoot threes this year. He looks good playing next to Devontae Graham, who's a hell of a find for them. Maybe they're ready to take their medicine. Then I give up. Houston can't acquire him without trading Capella or Tucker, and I don't see that as worth
Miami
it.
Miami is the most sensible one in terms of fitting contracts together, but I'm not sure he fits with that team.
I mean, is it – my sense about Miami has been they are not going to be in the business. Is Winslow in this deal for you? A theoretical Kevin Love deal, do they have to give up Winslow?
I'm not sure they have to.
Okay, then that gets a little more interesting to me. Because I don't think Miami's going to be in the business of trading 23 for 31, age-wise. I just that's unless the 31 is
right
superstar. And then it gets in, I mean, summer 2021, you know they want to be a player. And Kevin Love makes $31 million then the following season. Now you can, and you've got Bam Adebayo, will have a cap hold that summer of something like $15 million. And Butler and Love and that alone, you're out of the Giannis.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's before a Hero and whoever else, Kendrick Nunn, whoever else is on the roster.
Yeah.
At that point. But you can always sign and trade, right? You can always, there's always ways to get around not having cap space.
Hey, what about Phoenix?
They're on my list. Sell me on Phoenix as a Kevin Love destination.
I'm just thinking if that was the type of thing they would do.
They're on my list. Here's my whole list right here. Phoenix is right here. Right here.
I mean, obviously you have to be convinced that he can play with Ayton and or Baines.
You're not stopping anyone with an Ayton Kevin Love 4-5 combination right now.
Even with Ricky? Ricky can't steal the ball from everybody?
It helps.
Ricky, Booker. You could do like... what would a deal even look like, I guess?
Well, you got Tyler Johnson.
Tyler Johnson is a foundation. So you do like Tyler Johnson and Oubre or something?
Plus, Oubre. I'll tell you, I like watching Kelly Oubre play. He's a maniac. I never know what's going to happen. I feel like he's actually... let's call it his energy has been channeled in a more productive direction this year. And there's less of like, what is he doing? Why is he just careening across the court in random directions at random times? Why is he spacing out while his guy cuts backdoor for a dunk?
Yeah.
I feel like
yeah.
there's less of that and more of like Kelly Oubre is applying his energy
yeah.
in positive ways. He's like,
he's
like
been refreshingly solid this year. I would agree with that. But if you put him in a deal, you can just move up Bridges. So, like, you have some ability to do that. I mean, you have to put something in the deal, right?
Do you think Bridges could pass the Phil Jackson test? Was it Phil Jackson could sit in the back seat of a car and reach and open the front doors or something like that? Wasn't there some Phil – his arms were so long that, like, from anywhere in a four-door car, he could open the driver's door. And there's some story like that. Mikal Bridges' arms are like – he's like Plastic Man out there.
Yeah, yeah. And you really see it defensively. And offensively, he really hasn't – gotten to the point he was at Villanova.
Phoenix is intriguing. Cleveland may just be stuck. It just may not happen this year. People have tried to pitch me on Indiana. I don't see.
What's the Indiana deal that makes sense? You have to give up Turner or Sabonis, right?
Turner. I think Sabonis has just been flat better than Turner this year, and it hasn't really been close.
Yeah.
I don't see why that's worth the Pacers' while. Dallas has been mentioned. Don't see it. Saw some Denver speculation today. Don't see it.
Yeah, that's.
Don't see it.
I have trouble with that one too.
It's not going to happen. I don't see it.
Dallas. Like, it's again one of those deals. Dallas. If he was 25, I think you're all over it. But you kind of want guys on the same timeline as Luka and Porzingis. You would think.
Yeah, I don't see it. And Tim Hardaway, in the role they have him in. starting as the littlest guy in their massive starting lineup has been making shots, and he's been good. Like, Tim Hardaway's been good for their team. We're out of Kevin Love teams. That's it. That's my whole list, unless I miss somebody. Utah, Houston, Washington, Boston. Yeah, I got everybody.
Cheska Moscow.
Ooh, don't do that. Kevin Love's a good player.
No, he is.
Did you see their game against Philly when they were down by 40 at halftime?
I did not.
Have you seen film of the greatest three-second violation in the history of the NBA?
You know what? I don't think I have.
You need to go watch it.
Okay.
Kevin Love planted his ass in the lane mm-hmm. in the second quarter with Cleveland down by 9,000 points
mm-hmm.
and stood there. And stood there for so damn long that the entire Sixers bench started yelling. And he still stood there, even as Brett Brown was on the court yelling for a three-second violation. And then, as the coup de grace, he raised his hand to call for the ball and alert, and I think on purpose, alert the referees, that's right, I'm still here. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty damn sure that was his way of saying, Colin Sexton and Darius Garland, will you f***ing pass? Will you pass me the ball one time? I'm so sick of that. You have to find it. It's my favorite 3 second violation ever. I've never seen a more theatrical 3 second violation.
Wow. I'm really intrigued. I had no idea I was missing so much with that Philly game.
It's one step away from writing, who is it? Chris Morris that wrote Trade Me on his shoes.
Well, somebody wrote All Alone on his shoes. Who was that? This was back in the day.
It was
real. Like Sprewell or Marbury or somebody like that?
It was really, really good. Looking for other great NBA podcasts? Download and subscribe to Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective, as well as the Woj Pod, wherever you get your podcasts. Give me another a trade team that's interesting to you. I mean, I nominated Minnesota, Phoenix, Houston, Spurs. We've talked about Miami, Pelicans. Who resonates? Who's interesting?
I think the Pelicans are starting to get interesting now because I think they're a lot worse than they expected to be. Like, I think they made these moves for, like, Favors and Redick, thinking, okay, we got Zion, he's good. We got Jrue Holiday, he's good. Like, we're ready to present ourselves as a pretty good team this year, and then we can go into the summer and be a little bit of a magnet for players. It just hasn't worked out that way at all. Obviously, not having Zion at all has subtracted from that. They haven't had Favors. They've just been bad on defense. Like, just
I don't understand how this can happen to a team. I was watching them. I watched their game against Detroit.
I watched it too.
We're 20 whatever games into the season. There are 8 possessions a game where New Orleans takes a shot, and 4. Or all 5 guys are, like, not even just below the foul line, way below the foul line. The other team gets a rebound and gets a 3-on-0 or a 2-on-1. Like, I don't understand how this is still happening 20 games into the season. 8 possessions a game, 6 possessions, whatever it is. Their floor balance is so bad. That seems like a very easily coachable thing.
I guess I just don't get a lot with that. It's less than the sum of its parts, clearly. Like, you look at the team out there against Detroit last night. They're playing at home. You think they should win this game by 15 points, right? And, I mean, they missed some open threes and whatever, and Redick had a tough night. But, man, it's just – Jrue Holiday has not been able to repeat what he did last year. That's definitely been part of it.
Yeah, he hasn't hit his stride. JJ's shot the ball well, but there are games where it seems tough. And Ingram has been – whatever, they're 6-18, and so your tendency, I think, is to sort of maybe downgrade Ingram's ascendancy as well. He's on the losing team. This Ingram thing is real. He's playing really, really well on both ends of the ball. He's taking more threes, getting to the rim more free throws. Like, every indicator is throw the record out. What's happened here is genuine advancement in a way that leads toward winning eventually, yeah. I think.
What's his trade value? Do you have the stones to trade him if you're New Orleans?
No, I don't think you do. I think he has high trade value, but I don't think you do.
Because he's one of the few guys who will get paid, because these guys who are kind of in their 20s, they're going into a much better free agent market, because what I call the forlorn five, right? When you look at Charlotte, Atlanta, Memphis, Cleveland, there's one other team down there. There are 5 bad teams who are going to have max level cap space. And who are they going to be targeting? They're not going to be looking at 32-year-old veterans, or at least they shouldn't be. They're going to be looking at guys like Brandon Ingram. So I think he's going to be an expensive guy to keep.
Oh, he's going to get the max.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question about that. And by the way, I don't fault the Pelicans for not extending him, even as all the dominoes were falling on the day that the extensions were the extension deadline, even as it was clear that there's only one or two guys left now, and they're all I don't blame him. He hadn't played a game for them. He was coming off a health issue that I think internally they felt confident was nothing or was like resolved, the blood clot stuff. But I rarely do you see a team acquire a player and give them the max having never seen them play a game for their own team. You know what I mean? So they'll end up paying him $5 million more a year than they would have had they extended him. You know, if he would even have accepted that, I don't know.
Yeah, there was too much uncertainty in their situation, I think. I think that's right. I had no expectation they would do a deal with him.
But he's been legit. The guy there that I watched them, and it's year three now, and I find myself just asking, like, what is Lonzo Ball? Like, what is he? What is he on a good team? What is Lonzo Ball? Because it's pretty clear by now he's not a traditional point guard. He's not going to handle the ball in the half court 75% of the possessions he's on the floor. Because and off the ball, he's smart. He gets rebounds. He cuts. He makes extra passes. Like, that's all very Rondo-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, if Brandon Ingram's running pick and roll and Lonzo's in the corner and, like, what happens when Zion comes back? Like, I'm not really sure what he's doing. And all of the stuff that, Lonzo Ball is a basketball player. He understands how to play basketball. He's instinctual. He's smart. He does all these little things that we just talked about. When you start to talk about what he does and what he doesn't do, he starts to sound like a good bench player, like a really good sixth man kind of bench player. Because I watched the Pelicans, like, he's in the game, and then he's playing with Ingram and Holiday. Then he's playing by himself, so he's more like a traditional player. I just don't know what he is in the NBA.
Yeah, I think part of it is where does he fit in a half-court offense? Now, his catch and shoot has gotten better. The stroke looks better. He's even starting to take a few step backs, which he always had trouble getting into that shot off the dribble. He's taken it from way over on the left side to a little more in the middle of his body where it's a little easier for him to pull off. But, I mean, he's never going to be a guy, though, where you're like, oh, we left Lonzo Ball open, you know? So I think that's a problem. He's not a pick-and-roll operator, even though he's a tremendous transition player. So if you're not going to play crazy fast, it's harder to really find the right slot for him.
I like watching him play, and I want him to succeed because I like watching high IQ guys with a great feel for the game, and he's one of them. I just don't know what he is in the NBA. People, hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where it's simple, fast, and smart, and growing businesses can connect to qualified candidates. Imagine that. Codable co-founder Gretchen Huebner experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a new game artist to grow with their educational tech company. That's frustrating. But then she switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference, and you can too by signing up for free. Literally, you can't get any cheaper than free. At ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost, the name of this podcast. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. That's nice. And by using ZipRecruiter's screening questions to filter candidates, Gretchen found it easier to focus on the best ones and then find the right one. In fact, after posting her job on ZipRecruiter, Gretchen said she was honestly surprised she found qualified applicants so quickly and hired a new game artist in less than 2 weeks. That's nothing. With results like that, it's no wonder why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes and try it for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/lowpost. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOWEPOST. Sometimes for inspiration, you just have to look up. For more than 60 years, the Goodyear blimp has fueled greatness on the gridiron by providing aerial coverage of some of the most legendary moments in college football history. When the Goodyear blimp rises above a stadium, it inspires players to reach higher and rise to the challenge of the game's biggest moments. Now it's your turn to go further with Goodyear. Discover tires made to rise above the rest. Learn more at Goodyear.com. Goodyear, more driven. Okay, I'm going to give you two teams. You can pick one.
Okay.
San Antonio or Orlando? Orlando's a team sneakily,
Let's talk about Orlando.
sneakily interesting.
Let's talk about a guy who could be, who could actually end up being about the number one free agent in this awful summer coming up.
Evan Fournier.
Evan Fournier is having a year. He's been good.
He's been good when they've needed it because Vucevic is out.
Yep.
And so Vucevic is the hub of everything their bad offense does on offense. And so now Fournier is the hub of everything their still pretty bad offense does on offense. They're 11 and 12. So they've stabilized. They are eighth right now. However, I think they had expectations to be better than that this year. And I think those expectations were justified. However, part two, 1 through 7 in the East looks pretty strong. Milwaukee, Boston, Miami, Philly, Toronto. Indiana is going to play some real basketball teams. Like they're not playing the Washington Generals every night anymore, but they're going to play some, they're good. And they're 15-9. They're 15-9 without Oladipo, and like Brogdon's been injured.
Yeah.
Turner was out a while.
They're not going away. Yeah.
They're good.
Their floor is 6, I think.
I'm very impressed by the Pacers. For them to be 15-9, I don't care what their schedule is. I don't care how many games against the Generals they've had. With all their injuries, to be 15-9, tip of the cap to the Pacers. The Nets are 13-10. Kyrie's missed a long time now. They're fine.
Is that why they're 13-10 though?
Well, it's getting interesting, isn't it? You know what?
I don't really believe that, but it's something that's going to be talked about more just because Dinwiddie has stepped up and been so good in his place.
Dinwiddie is really good, and it's not just Kyrie.
If only there was a way to invest in that.
Oh, I don't know what's going on there. Have you tried?
No.
That would be fun if we could ever actually invest in his contract, however the hell that would work. I lost track, honestly. It is, you know, are the Celtics better without Kyrie takes started flying last year? A little too spicy to the touch for me. It's like touching an oven. A little bit too, ooh, ow. Mm-hmm. You know, how can, you know, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's an NBA champion.
Yeah.
Second best player on a championship team made one of the 5 greatest shots in the history of the NBA.
Yeah.
Scored 30 and 40 a game toward the end of those finals. And yet, we all knew, all of us knew, not a number one option on a championship team. Mm-hmm. When he demanded a trade, a lot of us, the general media snickered at the idea that you want to get out of LeBron's shadow to run a team? Good luck. Then the Celtics just won every game when he didn't play. He made the conference finals, and then last year they had a great record when he didn't play. The Nets have been fine without him. It's getting interesting. I don't think it's something to be dismissed or laughed at as a hot take. Not that teams are better without him, that he's bad, but that there's something about the way he plays that adds up to less winning than it should.
I think he's a hard guy to play with.
Maybe that's part of it. He likes to dance. He leads the league this season for sure in, he missed. Like, oh, look at that dribble. Oh, he missed the 15-footer. Like, there's a lot of dancing. And I think there's, like, diminishing actual basketball production returns and, like, the dancing. Kemba Walker goes north-south. When Kemba Walker makes moves there to get north-south, there's no wasted time. There's no wasted motion. Now, all of this is irrelevant once the real best player on the team, the guy who's 7 feet tall and wearing hoodies on the bench every night, just comes back, and that's KD. You know, all of this. But I think it's interesting. All right, so to Orlando. 11 and 12. Top 7 in the East is pretty strong. Detroit's not going to give up. The fighting Boylans, maybe we'll figure it out at some point and make a push for the 8th seed. I don't know. Maybe not. Orlando, I bet, feels a little. I mean, there were the DeRozan rumors a couple weeks ago. They might feel a little pressure to do something. What's the something?
I think that's the big question. I do. So at some point, that new management group, you know, Weltman and John Hammond.
That's so new.
Not as new anymore. They haven't really made that move where they push their chips in and make a large bet. You know, they re-signed Vooch, re-signed Terrence Ross. The Bamba pick is...
Looking
a little iffy.
Yeah, I mean, the rookie season was a wash due to injury. And I will say, he's shooting the three well. He's young and he needs to put on weight, but I would like to see him play a little bit more like a center sometimes. Like when he gets a mismatch, he fades away. He doesn't like go up to like hurt people, go up to dunk, go up to do something painful to smaller humans. Anyway, the new front office group.
And they have a pretty interesting collection of quote unquote assets and contracts. And you watch them and you think if they just had one or two pieces in kind of different areas, like Jonathan Isaac is really interesting because he's a little, you can see what a force he is. Like even last night against Milwaukee, blocked three shots in the first 3 minutes. But then offensively, he just doesn't fit with anything they do. And they're already a little short on shooting and kind of instinctual ball movement. And to have him and Aaron Gordon together at the forward spot. And now it's worse now because you're playing with Ken Birch. You don't even have to guard.
I like Ken Birch.
I like him too, but I'd like him more if he looked at the basket once in a while.
I like him as a bench guy.
Yeah.
Starting center is a little much.
Yeah.
But, you know, they don't have a lot of choices right now. Well, it all comes down to one guy, right? When you're talking about what is Orlando going to do, it comes down to one guy. Are they ever going to reach? They're going to reach a point somewhere with Aaron Gordon where he's either.
That's the guy. Yeah. To me, you have to find something where you can convert him into perimeter talent that fits better with Vooch and Isaac.
Because I know teams call them about Isaac all the time. The league loves Isaac. The other teams, and Orlando throws the phone out the window. Just don't bother. At some point, they are going to have to entertain discussions with Gordon. Unless he becomes the player that all of us wish him to be, which is whatever his version of Draymond Green is. Stop trying to be LeBron and score 25 a game and run pick and roll and just cut and rebound and screen and roll your way into 15 points, 8 rebounds, and 4 assists a game and play all-world defense, which he did last year in fairness. He really embraced embraced that side of the ball last year. But I expected – I had hope for an Aaron – like an Oladipo-style mid-career leap for him in a different way towards that kind of player that I just described, and it has not happened. And he's the one guy. Like, there are a lot of teams that still like him regardless and feel like they can unlock the kind of player he should be. Like, he would draw a lot of interest if they put him out there at all.
I agree. Yeah. The other interesting question with Orlando, get back to Frenchie here, is if Fournier opts out of his contract or not.
I would think he would have to, right? I mean, that's what you're saying about being the belle of the ball in free agency. He has a $17.15 million player option for next season.
Yep.
He's having a career year. He's in his prime. At this point, I would be surprised if he didn't opt out.
As a wing player, generally, you're going to face a pretty good market in the way the league is right now. If you're a good wing player who can play offense, you're usually going to get paid. I suppose Orlando could extend him.
It was a thought that I had before the season when I was looking through guys like veteran extension candidates, you know, the rare veterans who for 120% of their salary or whatever it will be, will sign those kind of deals. I thought about it. It's still possible. Any Spurs thoughts? Weirdest season in the league, the 9-14 San Antonio.
I think Spurs. Everyone talks about, I was talking about this with Nate Duncan on our podcast. So everyone talks about DeRozan and Aldridge. I think Rudy Gay is a sneaky trade topic.
I like that.
Pretty good player. Easier number to get to at 15. You know, has that positional flexibility between 3 and 4, even if he's probably more 4 now than 3. Doesn't really get a lot of talk or mentions, but if the Spurs season is circling the drain, I think they'd have to look at it.
Yeah, it's funny how...
And he's not a rental.
He's got a year left after this one. It's funny how the pendulum has swung... so far on, like, you know, they came into the year as well. The Spurs won 48 games last year. I was optimistic about them. And if you're optimistic about them, you say, well, maybe they'll be a buyer. Maybe they'll come in and try to upgrade their team. Pop's almost at the end of his career.
See, that's what I thought too, because they asset wise, they're in position to be a buyer. They have a lot of young players. They have their picks. They have expiring contracts.
And then it goes south real fast and real bad. And then you think, well, are they going to trade DeRozan or Aldridge and see what they can get in terms of future assets? And then they've won a couple games in a row. The West 8th seed and 7th seed are all totally in play for almost everybody. No one has run away with those. And now you're like, I don't know what the heck they're doing. I do think it would be a fascinating market experiment, and I don't think we're going to get to see it. I just wish we could see it. What would DeMar DeRozan get if he opted out of his contract He has a $27.7 million player option for next season. In this market, not a lot. All the teams that have cap space, as you mentioned, big cap space, are bad.
Yeah.
DeRozan's 30, I think.
Mm-hmm. Plus, all these analytics holes have ruined his value.
I mean, I don't know what kind of people you're talking about, who you associate with. What would he actually get? Because there's always the theory, like, people always just say, well, of course he'll get 20 whatever million. He's DeMar DeRozan, or he's like, all it takes is one. All it takes is one team, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all
right, who's the one?
Who's the one with DeMar? Like, I just think it would be a really interesting, because, you know, for the last few years it's been, well, he's a classic floor raiser. He raises your floor. He doesn't raise your ceiling, but he raises your floor. And I'm like, but the floor in San Antonio is pretty low now. Like, like someone took a sledgehammer and like hammered a hole in the floor. And he's only getting older, and his defense is only getting worse. And his aversion, although he took 5 threes the other night, I've like took a double take when I checked the box. I'm like, DeMar DeRozan took 5 threes.
That's a Spurs team total some games.
I mean, I guess there would be a Charlotte or a Detroit or one of these teams would talk themselves into it, maybe. But I think I just wish we could see it play out, because I just wonder what would happen.
I think he would have a hard time getting to his current number. I think he'd have a really hard. I mean, there's definitely a number. Like at some point, somebody would say, okay, all right. But what is that number? Is it 20? Is it 15?
I don't know. 20 is a lot. 20 is a lot.
I'm with you.
Can I ask you one Memphis question?
Yeah.
It's the question that everyone has to know the answer to.
Okay.
When you're 95 years old,
mm-hmm.
you're reflecting on your Memphis Grizzlies tenure.
Mm-hmm.
When someone says the word Brooks to you, what is the image that is going to pop into your head? What is the memory of that night? Because I remember exactly where I was that night. I mean, mm-hmm. I remember exactly how it was unfolding. I remember that, like, but what inside, what is the memory going to be like for you? It's an all-time NBA moment.
Yeah. So the thing that was weird about that night is we were playing a game, and so was Washington. So we had gotten off the phone with Ernie. So it's not uncommon in a three-team deal for one team to kind of be in the middle of it and deals with the other two teams and kind of brings everybody together at the end. Like we had done that in our deal with Miami and Charlotte, for instance, in 2016, where I was talking to Miami, talking to Charlotte, and then at the end we kind of brought everybody together, got on the trade call and whatnot. So we got off the phone with Ernie before our game, and everyone kind of said, okay, we'll play our game and then we'll come back and wrap this up tomorrow morning. I think somewhere along the way to Phoenix, this message got lost, because then the trade leaked from Phoenix's side while we were playing our game. So that creates problem, because we're in the fourth quarter of our game and I'm getting text messages from people like you and reporters in Memphis and whatnot, you know, who's in the deal? Is it Dillon or Marshawn? And meanwhile, Marshawn's playing in the game while his mom, I think, is in the stands trying to get his attention and tell him he's been traded. It was the weirdest thing. And right at the end, I get a call from somebody in Phoenix saying, well, wait a minute. Is it Marshawn or Dillon? I was like, it's Marshawn. We're not giving you Dillon. And I hear the voice on the other end go, oh. And right at that moment, you get that sinking feeling like, oh, my goodness.
So none of this is funny for you, is what you're saying. For me, it's 100% funny.
Oh, I'm sure everyone in the whole media sphere had a blast with it, and I get that. Not as much fun for us, because we had to – I mean, right as the game ends, Chris has to go down to the locker room and basically intercept Marshawn and Dillon and tell them what happened and grab the coach. And because, again, just the timing of it, like right as a game is ending, for all this to leak out. Because otherwise, if it weren't for the fact of that game happening at the same time, I think it would have been a very easy thing to sort of clean up and put the genie back in the bottle. But
would you hear the word? Would you swim in a brook? Would you wade in a brook? When you hear the word Brooks,
I'm still cool with Brooks, because we got Dillon Brooks with the 45th pick, and he's turned into a nice player.
Okay, yeah, so, he's a good player.
Yeah,
It's a shame. I just still, the jokes were just flying that night. Like, could we get Scott Brooks involved? Is Brooke Lopez in here at all? It was a great night in the NBA. Can I give you my one remaining Knicks take?
Okay.
The Knicks president job is a good job.
Wow. Okay.
You are granted autonomy to hire whoever you want, which has not been the case and was not the case for David Griffin. Everyone is going to be like, why would Masai Ujiri take the Knicks job? No, I'm not speaking about Masai specifically, but I think that question dismissing it is ignoring lots of different factors for Masai and any other of these big names. Like, why would you leave such and such great situation? And Toronto's an amazing situation. They've done an amazing job. Their ownership lets them do whatever they want.
Yeah.
They have carte blanche to do anything. The reason the Knicks job is a great job is, A, you'll get paid a ton of money.
Mm-hmm.
And B, nothing can ever be your fault. It's always, if you come in with the pedigree that the names that we're talking about come in with, you can't lose. You get money, and if the team goes haywire, it's always going to be Dolan's fault. It's never going to be your fault. No one is ever going to not hire you because of your failure with the New York Knicks. That's my take.
Huh.
If you're one of those guys who comes in with that level of track record. No one, you don't.
What about Phil Jackson?
No front office track record.
Okay.
People trash the hire as soon as it happened for that reason.
Okay.
It's always going to be, it's great. It's always going to be someone else's fault.
What about Mike Woodson? He coached the Knicks and actually won games.
Then his eyebrows disappeared. His eyebrows disappeared before.
No, I think they disappeared in Atlanta at some point.
That's
an interesting take. I think the thing you always wonder about with the Knicks job, you can be promised autonomy, but then in the moment, can he help himself?
Well, but this is what – so in the wake of this latest whatever, there were all these sort of what went wrong analyses. And embedded in some of those was a sort of side debate over whether James Dolan is quote-unquote meddling. And there was some reporting that James Dolan has not been meddling in basketball decisions, and therefore the James Dolan meddling factor is being overplayed by a media who's just seeking a slouchy villain in a jazz band. And I don't – that's great. If he's not meddling in basketball decisions, awesome, because when he meddles, they do things like trade a top 10 pick for Andrea Bargnani, who stinks and everyone knows he stinks, and it's a disaster to do that. But there's other kinds of meddling, and like one kind of meddling is making your PR department issue embarrassing tweets to counteract things that are not worth counteracting. Yeah. Another kind of meddling is sitting in the front row and being so enraged by your team getting blown out after game 10 that you send your poor front office people out to give an impromptu press conference about how the team they built should be better than it is, and they both look like they're hostages during the video.
People who, by the way, are literally never allowed to talk to the press at any other time.
That's meddling. And the reason I say that that's meddling that matters is the rest of the league, including the players you purport to want to come to your team, are watching this spectacle, wondering the same thing that all of us are wondering and making the same jokes that all the rest of us are making about the Knicks. So, like, it's great if he's not telling Scott Perry and Steve Mills who to trade and who to acquire and what not to trade. No, that's great. That's a nice step forward. But it's still, there's other kinds of meddling that are very clearly still happening and still hurting the Knicks.
Absolutely. And then you haven't even gotten into sort of staff decisions and some of the other stuff there.
But I still think if they can get one of those.
The one thing is, I mean, if you come in there and turn the Knicks into a winner, then you own this town, right?
So, yes. Yeah. There's still nothing like Madison Square Garden when it's live, man. There's still nothing like it. Barclays Center is not like that.
It's certainly not Barclays Center.
Even with Kyrie there, Barclays Center is not like that. How long are you here in New York, Mr. Hollinger?
I'm going to be here for 2 days, so I'm going to see a college doubleheader tonight, and then I'm going to see the Brooklyn Nets play tomorrow night.
Nets-Hornets.
I mean,
Seats are still available. Tickets are still available. On SeatGeek. You can get a lot of good deals on SeatGeek.
Then I'm going to head up to Boston and watch Boston play Philly. That should be a little bit of a better game.
You and I both picked the Sixers to make the finals.
Yes.
You picked the Sixers to win the championship, I believe.
Sixers over Clippers.
I had Clippers over Sixers. How do you feel 24 games in? The Sixers are 17-7. Let's do 2 minutes. How do you feel about the bizarre? I'm obsessed with the Sixers. I want to move to Philadelphia. They're the weirdest, craziest, biggest, whatever collection of talent I can remember. They have the most idiosyncratic player in the entire league in Ben Simmons. Mm-hmm. What is your temperature take on the Sixers team that we both liked a lot?
I still don't know exactly what to make of them. I'm still banging my head a little bit. I still feel like they need to make one more move, get one more guy who's a real perimeter threat.
That's why we didn't talk, when we talked buyers, we didn't talk top of the league, because obviously they're all going to be buyers and they're all going to be searching, whether it's Iguodala or whoever, they're all going to be searching for like this year's Mirotić, the sort of fringy bench guy who happens to, or this year's Ilyasova / Bellinelli for the Sixers, whatever it is, right?
Yeah. But Philly, they're in an interesting spot because they can get to sort of a $10 to $15 million guy relatively easily, more easily than some of these other teams can, with the contracts they have sitting around. Mike Scott especially would probably be the centerpiece of that, if they're willing to put Zaire Smith in a deal.
I honestly forgot Zaire Smith existed until you said his name right now. Mike Scott makes 4.7. Zaire Smith gets you to 8. That's it, though. The rest of them are all the starters, right? I mean, Ben, Josh, the starters who have barely played. I think they've played like 70 minutes together and blown the doors off people, but they've barely played. So I do feel like we've barely seen the real Sixers. It's funny. I was talking to somebody today about Giannis and the Bucks. They're 21-3 and just destroying everyone.
And we're not even really talking about them.
Giannis is taking 5 threes a game and looks very comfortable. If Giannis starts to really make even more of these shots, it's a wrap. And yet somehow, I still am in, like, I look at Eric Bledsoe's stat line. He's shooting 31% from three. And I get the shivers because I know what's going to happen in the playoffs.
Yep. He was the guy in that series last year where, I mean, if you're paying him that much money to be that player and you have to take him off the floor for George Hill in a conference finals,
George Hill's been good. DiVincenzo's been good. I love Connaughton. Like, they have the pieces, so maybe I shouldn't worry. And I'm not really worried. I do feel like the Sixers have another gear. I don't know that the Bucks have another gear, other than maybe Giannis goes supernova even more than he already is. But the Bucks have established themselves as clear favorites, even for those of us who picked the Sixers to make the finals. I think we'd have to look at the Bucks and say, boy, they're even better than we thought. And I thought the Bucks would run away with the number one seed. I didn't pick the Sixers to make the finals because I thought they would be the number one seed. I did not think they would be. I'll tell you what should scare the whole league, though, about the Sixers. If Tybull can really shoot threes...
Whew. I'm still deeply suspicious of that.
But your suspicion is not fun. It would be more fun. Now, Tybull is up to like 38 or 40% or something. He's on a hot streak right now.
Yeah, I know he is.
44%.
I mean, you watch him shoot 50 times before a game, though. And
I'm taking the ferry home from this studio. The ferry is like a block away from here. If he were standing in my way of the ferry, I don't think I would ever get home. There's no way to get around him. He would block me off at every turn. He could just the things he does defensively are just insane. He gets his hand on the ball all the time. There is no escaping him. And if he ends up shooting it well enough that they can put him on the floor in the playoffs with the rest of their defensive players, that's a spicy meatball.
Yeah, I still think they need one more guy who can dribble and create.
It has been interesting to see them, and again, Josh Richardson has been hurt for a while now, but to see them play around with, okay, when Simmons is off the floor, do we need Neto or Trey Burke to play, or can we just let Josh Richardson be the backup one? I think that's going to be a season-long sort of debate for them, because those guys have been all right when they've played. Neto and Burke have been fine.
Yeah.
You still feel confident about that pick, Sixers to the finals?
I don't know about confident. I mean, I didn't feel crazy confident about it even at the time. I mean, I think coming into the year, a reasonable take was that Philly and Milwaukee were co-favorites in the East. And I think Milwaukee has probably edged ahead of them in that discussion. I do think, though, playoff Philadelphia is so interesting because their hugeness on defense can be such a factor, but they don't, I'm not sure they have that one guy. Who are you going to put? I guess you put Ben Simmons on Giannis. I'll take that back.
Horford.
Embiid. They've done that. They'll try
all of them. They'll try all of them. I think it's more, what's more interesting is how much help they can supply that person, but they're so big with their help defenders that they can get back to shooters in time that they're not just getting bombarded by open looks.
Because even against Toronto, they were swallowing guys up with their size and their length in that series last year.
All right, you got to go to
four bounces, man.
I know. It's incredible. It's incredible to think about. It's incredible to think about the margins in this sport.
And Embiid missed a game too, remember?
In that series?
Yes. He had the stomach distract.
I thought that was... But it's the margins of team building. Boston's refusal to trade Jaylen Brown for Kawhi Leonard looked so bad in May and June. But then you think like, well, look what it took for Toronto just to get out of the second round with Kawhi Leonard. It took four bounces. And then you think, okay, well, now we've learned subsequently, A, Jaylen Brown is really good. He's averaging 20-something a game. It looks like now his playmaking is still, you know, a little below what you would want it to be. He's never going to be Kawhi Leonard, obviously. It might never be 90% of Kawhi Leonard. But we've learned that he's really good in improving and has another level to get to still, I think. I think Jaylen Brown will be an all-star soon.
Possibly this year.
Season.
Yeah.
And we've also learned there was probably 100% probability that Kawhi was leaving.
Yeah.
And so what looked like a no-brainer, dumb decision, Boston fell on its face. I do think Boston was a little too confident in its long-term outlook at that time. But it's still, even in the limelight of the Raptors winning a title and Kawhi winning finals MVP, that's still these decisions that people
took a lot of things to go. And, you know, you mentioned the four bounces. The thing you don't remember is them getting off the mat to win that narrow game three. It went to overtime, didn't it, in the conference finals against Milwaukee?
Oh, yeah.
They were hanging on by a thread in that game, and they would have been down 3-0 and probably curtains at that point.
These decisions that people, and I'm guilty of it too, that people think are easy in the moment are never easy. And that's it. All right, you got to go. I got to catch a ferry. John Hollinger, the greatest of all time, the gold standard, and you can read him at The Athletic, and I'm selfishly excited that we can read you again. Thank you for coming on.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.